Matt Carpenter, are you coming to the picnic table? Oh, my goodness. Joe Roderick said, I think Matt Carpenter's coming on the show today. And I said, well, that would be wonderful. And, Doug, look, Matt Carpenter is coming on the show. He's a man of his word.
Well, this is a pleasure and an honor to have him join
Matt
us.
Carpenter joins us here at the Post Sports Bar and Grill picnic table. Matt, welcome to the picnic table.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you on the program. I don't know when the last time you were on this. I doubt it's something you remember even doing one time. But nonetheless, it's great to have you back.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
How many interviews do you think you've done over your career? Radio, TV, up to 1,000 or so?
Maybe. I mean, it's. I would go take the over on that.
I would too, because it's at least one a day.
Yeah, I would definitely
maybe,
take the over.
Yeah, maybe 2,000.
I've been looking forward to talking to you most of everybody, actually, because you have been at winter warm-up, essentially issued an apology, and then your comments to Rick Hummel a couple days ago. So let's start with the winter warm-up. Clearly, how you performed last year was like eating at you, I gather, in order to say that. I mean, you know, plenty of guys struggle. And they probably just internalize it. I'm sure it frustrates them, but it clearly bothered you to the point that you stood up in front of people and said, I'd like to apologize for it. So take me through the thought process of saying that.
I don't think it takes much, you know, it's pretty obvious if you followed the Cardinals at all that, you know, last season didn't go well for me personally. And, you know, I was very just unhappy with the way that I played. And, you know, I look back on and as I reflect on that year, you know, it really grinds at me. And, you know, I obviously am not thrilled or didn't enjoy the fact that I played it to what I would consider so badly. And, you know, I was thankful that our team played so well and we were able to accomplish some goals as a group, but individually I just, you know, fell short of everything that I thought I was going to be able to do going into that season. And looking back on it, I just felt like, you know, I needed to stand up there and confront really what I felt like was a very underachieving season. And, you know, everybody knows in St. Louis there's a high expectation for performance. And, you know, when you're given the opportunity as a player like myself to – you know, both have security financially, but also be able to go out there and get opportunities to play. I mean, you're called upon to go out there and play well. And I just didn't feel like I didn't do it enough and wanted to, you know, find a way to make it better and try to go out there this year and do a better job.
If you could look back on it, and I'm sure you did plenty, what were the things that you think were causing you not to have the success that you did, for example, in that like 7-week burst in 2018 or at other times in your career? Are there things that you look back on, you go, that's what I was doing wrong, or I think it was a combination of this? Was there a health issue?
No, you know, I mean, health was not an issue. You know, I came out of spring training, you know, ready to go physically, but, you know, most importantly, I think that, you know, last year, for whatever reason, I struggled out of the gates with my swing mechanics, and then it really just kind of snowballed from getting to the point where it became even some mental, little bit of a mental block with it, and just, you know.
Like you're in your own head?
Yeah, I just couldn't get out of, you know, overthinking it, and then, you know, trying to fix, you know, an 0-for-3 with a 3-run homer, which is never a good plan, and just swing got long and you know, tried to, you know, like I said, fix everything with a big swing, and instead of just getting back to, you know, what has gotten me, you know, to this point in my career, which is just having consistently good quality at bats, and just kind of snowballed, and I wasn't able to catch up. At the end of the year, I felt like I was, you know, getting back to who I was and getting it back, but at that point, you know, I really lost some playing time, and our group that was playing really well. And, you know, I, you know, took a back seat to it, which was probably the way it should have played out. I mean, we were winning and guys were doing well, and, you know, it's a game of performance. The guys who perform are going to play.
And most teams use such an extreme shift against you, and people watching on TV say, well, just hit it to the left side. It's not that easy to do, though, is it? To change your swing completely to hit it that way.
No, it certainly is not that easy. I mean, I think that's a common misconception that, you know, big league hitters can just go up there and, you know, just hit it to short every time if there's nobody there. I think you would see more of it if that was a reality. But, yeah, I mean, you know, it's hard to do. I mean, the shift is what The shift was created to eliminate. The reason it was created was because guys, you know, take bad swings, and bad swings result in ground balls to the pull side. So when you have a season where you're taking a lot of ground bad swings, you're going to hit a lot of ground balls to the pull side, and that's what the shift does, is it takes away that cheap hit. So, you just got to work on getting your swing back, and that in itself will avoid that shift more than anything.
I imagine there have been a lot of great hitters through history that if they had the shift back then, their average would be about 80 points lower than it really was.
I definitely think it would change some of the record books for sure. I mean, you know, you look at where baseball is now, the amount of data that they have, they can literally stand people where they see where your ball has gone, you know, 80% of the time over the last 5 years, and they put people there. I mean, it's pretty remarkable, and that's not an excuse. That's just the way the game is now.
Matt Carpenter, kind enough to join us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. We are live from Cardinal Spring Training. Tim McKernan and Doug Vaughn with you. The Cat is in the back doing his work for Fox Sports Midwest, and we're talking it over. It's all presented to you by Ravensburg Incorporated and by Budweiser, live in Jupiter, Florida on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and InsideSTL.com. I'm wondering how much of your frustration last year was also compounded by the fact that you signed an extension earlier in the year. Did that add to it that you perhaps felt like, man, they invested in me, and now I'm not living up to that investment? Does that factor into it, Matt?
I think it does. I mean, I look, you know, over my career to this point, the two worst seasons of my time here in St. Louis were 14 and 19. Both of those seasons came after signing an extension. In 14 at spring training, at the start of spring training, I signed my first extension, and then followed that up with, to that point, was the worst season of my career. And then, you know, last year in 19, signed an extension right before the season started, or right in the middle of the season, and followed that up with the worst season of my career. So there's certainly that element to it. I mean, when you do something like that, you want to go out and prove yourself even more, and sometimes that can be cause more harm than good. And, you know, again, I'm not making excuses, but, you know, that sometimes is that added pressure of, okay, I want to go out and make sure that I can prove this. And then you start trying too much. And baseball is a game where the harder you try, the worse you usually do. That was probably played a role in it, but, you know, thankfully we're past it and we can move forward, and we're going into this season, hopefully, go out and have a good year.
So you said you worked on your swing. Is that just to make more contact, or to make more contact the other way, or all that?
Both. You know, I really just want to get back to, the hitter that I was when I first kind of came up, and, using the whole field, having a short stroke, being a tough out, battling with two strikes, finding ways on base, and just really, you know, having good quality at bats. Consistently, and you know, that's the nature of hitting. If you can go out there and just be a tough out, you got a really good chance to be in the lineup, obviously, but also have a good season.
You think batting leadoff helps you do all that? Kind of have a different mindset than if you're hitting in the middle or lower in the lineup?
No, I mean, I think when I'm at my best, my approach will be the same no matter where I'm hitting. If my swing is where I hope it is right now, and my mentality of going up there and just having competitive at-bats is there, which it is, then, you know, the spot in the lineup I don't think will change that. Even if I am hitting, you know, in a position more where you would assume a guy was hit for power,
right,
you know, I would still take that same approach.
Matt Carpenter, kind enough to be with us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. So your interview with Rick Hummel, again, more candor, and I liked it. It got people talking, that's for sure, and I want to read a quote here. I don't follow chatter from fans a ton, but there might be some frustration from fans that would say, for a team that was so good, why wouldn't you go out and just add what was obviously a missing piece? More offense. But what was so really good about our team last year was our pitching and our defense, and we have all of that back. Pitching and defense don't slump, and you got all that back. You've got an offense you'd have to think is going to rebound, because you pointed out that everybody statistically had the worst offensive performances of their careers, Matt, maybe with the exception of Colton Wong. I'm going to play devil's advocate to that and say, well, now you're asking some guys who are in their 30s to experience a bounce back, even though most of them, including yourself and Paul Goldschmidt, for example, have had some incredibly offensive, successful years. So what would you say to fans who go, yeah, but we're hoping to see guys bounce back who might be on the back nine, so to speak, of their careers?
Well, I mean, my response to that is, you know, I'll speak for me specifically. You know, I was just a year removed. I followed the worst season of my career a year removed from arguably the best. So it's not like, you know, for me, it was we're asking 4 or 5 years ago when he was a great player. You know, I feel like there's a lot left in the tank for me personally. And then when I speak for other guys, you know, you look at, you know, Paul Goldschmidt, who had a great season, but in his own eyes and getting to know him personally, he thinks he was awful. You know, he thought he just had the worst possible season that could ever be imagined. And, you know, he kind of falls in the boat of what I was talking about earlier. When you sign that big extension, you're in a new place, you're, you know, getting to know each other, you know, getting to know your new teammates, getting to know your new surroundings, moving your family for the first time out of Arizona that he's, you know, lived in one house his whole career. A lot of moving parts, a lot of changes. And that takes an adjustment period. And to stay focused on going out and having really good, you know, at bats and good in a good season is hard to do. And he did a great job. But, you know, I would be willing to bet that we're going to see a much better version of Paul Goldschmidt, more like what the kind of guy we saw in Arizona going into this season. That'll be a huge, you know, plus. Mm-hmm. And really just, and I could say from all of our guys in our lineup, I just think in general, top to bottom, I think Harrison Bader is going to have a huge bounce back offensive season. You know, I think that, you know, our shortstop, Pauly, you know, that the month, I think it was, you know, the first month or month and a half that he had off to such a great start, I think we're going to see that carry over for a little bit longer stretch of time. You know, so I think we've got a bunch of guys that can go out and just have great years and, you know, really just add on to what, you know, we started last year and at times we saw last year and just be more consistent.
You think the group is together right now that could win the whole thing?
I do. I really like this team a lot. I mean, I think that we have everything that we need to go out and win the whole thing. I mean, you know, we just got to find a way to stay healthy and go out and do it.
Matt, I want to ask you about this because I thought you're so thoughtful. You don't do a whole lot of interviews, which is great because when you do sit down, it's thoughtful and it's not something you just shoot from the hip with. And you said you could imagine we could be even better. I don't know if you get this feeling, but we went to the NLCS last year and I don't feel like it's been celebrated as much as it should be. And I would agree with that. Now, I don't think you're like monitoring Twitter with burner accounts or something like that, you know, but I mean, there is this gap between the fan base right now and the organization. The fan base is really frustrated. Not everybody, but a lot of people are. And it is odd when you take a step back and go, man, that team was in the NLCS. I've said before, I think if you guys just lost like 4-2 to the Braves in game 5, the season may have been celebrated more as opposed to 4 straight games against the Nationals where it just looked like you weren't in the same class because they just shut the offense down. And then it put the microscope on the offense. And when Ozuna leaves and then there are no offensive additions, people go, God, this organization is just not committed to winning in 2020. And so I think it confuses some people. You, of course, just conveyed to Doug here that you feel differently about that. But I think that's the mindset of a healthy percentage of people in the fan base. What do you say to that?
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. I do sense it. I mean, you know, I'm not a guy that's like you said, following the pulse of Twitter, but there's just a sense that, you know, it's obvious that there's some frustration there. And you know, I'm kind of on the other side of it. I'm not that I don't feel for that, for every fan that is feeling some sort of, you know, confusion going into this year. But, you know, as the player and as a player on this team with this group of guys, I mean, I look at, you know, this group and what we accomplished last year, which I thought in a lot of ways we overachieved. As bad as we were offensively at times, what we were able to do in a division, which I think going into the year, not many people had us picked to win it. And then to lose in the series to the eventual World Series champion, even though it was ugly, you know, I felt like it was something that should be celebrated and accomplished. Now, it wasn't for whatever reason. The guys in that clubhouse, even us, you know, are hard on ourselves enough to where we wish we would have done better. Obviously, the goal was to win the whole thing. But when you reflect on the season, we were very proud of what we were able to accomplish and to come together and do what we did. And then going into this year, 2020, we look at that group and go, man, we know we're even better than what we were. And that's the thought that we have going into this year is like, hey, man, this is a group that in some ways, if we could have just played a little bit better offense, who knows what could have happened. And that's kind of our mentality. It's like, we know we're going to do that, and we've got all the other pieces to make a run. So we're looking at this year thinking, okay, watch out.
I'm sure that pressure comes from playing for a franchise where people just expect you to win. It's that way with the Yankees and the Red Sox and maybe now the Cubs. If you're playing for the Pirates and you just had the year you have, everybody's just thrilled. But I'm sure you prefer this kind of pressure.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, listen, I love the fact that, you know, our fan base demands, you know, a certain level of commitment from front office, from players, from the manager. Everybody steps a foot on that field in that uniform, they expect a certain product. And when they feel like they're cheated, I mean, I respect that. But I want them to understand that this is a team that has every piece that it needs to go out and compete and win this whole thing. And we are certainly going to give it our best effort. And everybody in that clubhouse thinks that we've got a legitimate shot. And I think the fan base should, too, because we do.
You hit it off with Goldschmidt quickly last year. I felt like I noticed that this time last year. Is that a fair assessment of you guys are friends and you hit it off? Did you know him well when he was over in Arizona?
You know, just a little bit of, you know, some of the All-Star games together and getting to know him through that. But also, you know, we have similar backgrounds, came from a similar area, played against each other growing up. But really didn't have a deep relationship. But, yeah, we're very like-minded. We approach the game in a very similar way. And
not really interested in the BS.
No. Yeah, so we just come in and, you know, get our work done and, you know, go home and be a dad and a husband. And so that part, we definitely hit it off. And he's just a good dude, a great teammate, and obviously a great player.
From that area, the focus, and now it's just, 15 minutes down 95 with what happened with the Astros. As a ball player and a guy who clearly is into the game and loves the game, what did you think of that? Had you heard rumblings of it before?
We, you know, obviously, you know, it's obviously an ugly deal. You know, you look at what has kind of happened over the last couple months and as it's kind of all unfolded, it seems like it just keeps getting deeper and deeper. You know, I had mentioned at the winter warm-up that I have taken, I don't even know what the exact number of at-bats that I've had in my major league career, but I have never, not once, stepped foot in the box knowing what was coming. I can't imagine what that's like.
Colton Wong said that's a bigger advantage than the guys who took steroids.
I mean, I can't disagree with that. It's a pretty remarkable advantage. And
so you've never had like a guy at second base go, okay, you know, and you guys have whatever signal to say it's going to be.
No, and we've tried it. We're just not good at it. we've tried really well. We've tried really hard in years to relay him the right way from second base. If a guy's, you know, tipping and trying to, you know, do it without technology, going out there and trying to do it. And that's why that part of the game is not considered cheating, and it's kind of part of the game because it is so hard to do. But anytime you put technology involved, you let technology become a part of it, then it, you know, it's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't imagine what that was like to go that, you know, to go a season with, you know, as long as they did with doing whatever they were doing, and you know, it's just an ugly deal. And who knows how many teams were doing it. I can tell you there's certainly, you know, probably more teams out there than just them that were doing it. You have your thoughts and guesses when you're playing a group, and you're just like, man, I just don't understand how these guys are taking swings on these pitches. And we were really paranoid about it all last year. We had those cards in our back pocket.
Yeah.
And we're constantly, you know, you would see, you know, Mike come out and hand a pitcher a new set of cards. We'd go through it. I mean, we were just super paranoid because we had feelings that there were some teams out there doing it, and then come out, and then for this to come out at the end of the year, it kind of, you know, obviously solidified the worry that we had.
Mm-hmm.
So
they must have had it almost 100% accurate, because if you start getting some wrong pitches that are coming, I mean, that could be dangerous. If you think you're getting a curveball and it's a fastball coming at your head and you're not bailing out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, a video camera doesn't lie. If you got a video camera set up,
right,
it's going to tell you what's happening. So,
yeah, Colton said yesterday to see Altuve turn on the outside what was it, a slider from Chapman,
yeah.
and pull that. That isn't necessarily the way that usually would work in those circumstances.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't know exactly what they were doing, but
How do you think Mike Fiers is treated now as the whistleblower? Is he a hero among baseball players? Or no, is he looked down upon for kind of violating the omerta?
That's an interesting kind of dilemma there. I'm not sure how he's going to be viewed. You know, I don't know if that was necessarily the right way to handle it. I can't say that it was the wrong way either. You know, it's certainly, I mean, you look at it, it certainly was something that needed to be addressed. You think about, you know, what's happened since then. You know, he's going to end up being kind of the fall guy or the guy that, you know, is going to get credit for breaking this thing. But, I mean, it needed to be broken. I mean, you know, so you can't fault him for that. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know what my thoughts are on it. I don't know how he's going to be received. But, you know, it was certainly something that needed to be done.
Kind of like Jose Canseco with the steroids. At first it was, what's he talking about? And then it's, wait a minute.
Yeah,
I guess
but he's still frowned upon.
Yeah,
from that, the guys from that era. Final thing, Matt, I remember Don Mattingly accused you guys of stealing signs in the famous 2013 NLCS where you had the classic at bat against Kershaw. And that was an article in ESPN the following year. And Matt Holliday was listening to our show, and we were reading it, and he texted the cat, and he goes, listen, he goes, he's welcome to say it. He goes, I'm just telling you, we weren't stealing signs.
No. I'm telling you, like I said, we were so bad at that.
What do you mean you're bad at it? Like you're trying to do it, and the guys are just relaying the wrong things?
Bad at it, like, you know, there's an art to getting to second base, and guys don't just, you know, throw down one, you know,
yeah,
number. It's a constant flow of different stuff. So you have to have the ability to, basically – decode a group of like seven signs and figure out what's being thrown. I mean, it's not the easiest thing to do. And then meanwhile, give some kind of discrete relay, whether you're touching something or do it to the hitter, and the hitter's got to see it, and then all that stuff has to happen. It's not easy.
And try not to get picked off with the
right
same sign.
It's not an easy thing to do. And we've just never, since I've been in St. Louis, we've never been great at that. We've tried it, and I'm not saying that it's never happened to a player, and maybe some other guys have been able to accomplish it and relay it, but me personally, I have never had it relayed to me, and I haven't had an at bat with it. So yeah, I mean that whole, I remember that specific episode in 13, and it was just laughable, you know, as a group, because we all know that not only were we not doing it, but if when we did try, we weren't very good at it.
Maybe that's why Holliday texted the cat. And look, Matt, right as you're getting ready to leave, the cat has arrived.
Hey, Jim.
That's kind of a stare down right there.
The tone of the interview just kind of went
Absolutely. We were just giving hot takes left and right.
No, it's great to see you.
No, that didn't seem sincere.
No,
the first one sounded a little aggressive, to be honest with you.
That was not intended. I'm really happy to see you. This is the first time I've actually got a chance to talk to you since you've been down here.
Well, we said hi once or twice, and we haven't done the gauntlet on the inside yet.
That's right.
We look forward to real substantive conversation in there. I don't know what you clowns were talking.
We just
about.
Asked about his favorite French fries and talked about it for about a half
salsa.
Hour.
Salsa, still wearing the salsa shirt. That's going well.
Yeah. Sadly enough, I went all season last year without making it. Surprisingly, I probably need to get back on that.
Maybe that was the key to it.
Yeah, Doug, come on. What are we doing here?
Was that true? So you would. Whoa.
I just got tired of it.
Don't say that. That's not good marketing.
Well, it's not on the market anymore anyway. So
it's not?
No, you can't buy it anymore.
Ooh, it's a classic.
What about the breakfast cereal?
That, I think, is...
Because my kid actually said, I like that. It's like sort of honeycombs or something. And he said, can we get that? And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to come back out then.
Potentially.
All right. I have a company called Jim Hayes Enterprises, and we can handle all that stuff.
This is the end of the interview, Doug.
For a small handling fee, we take 67% of the income, and then we distribute the rest. So you have that option if you want to do it.
Okay, great. Well, for those at home that can't see this, I'm taking off my headphones.
I knew it.
Notice that. Matt, thank you so much. That was great, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.